Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, once again, it's that time on a Wednesday evening at the 8 o'clock hour, the 8 p.m. hour, 8 to 9 p.m. Welcome to the Kay Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. I am what is commonly, the person that is commonly known as the Sun, also known as Eric Payne, also known as Citizen Payne, if you follow me on social media and all that stuff. And here is the lady who taught it all to me, the host. The one and only, Kay Thompson Live.
Yeah, sure, one and only is right. Okay, let's get this thing started. Kay Thompson Live, everyone. Welcome. We are going to start this show right away with talking to Ronnie Wright. Ronnie Wright is a cowboy, and he has introduced the care of horses to people in various school systems. And I happened to run into him the other day up there at the zoo, as a matter of fact, Eric. You know, he was sitting there, and I hadn't seen him in years. And then we got to talking, and I wanted to find out if he still was teaching, you know, the mechanics. And then when I say mechanics, I'm talking about dealing with horses and in Summit. And so we got to talking, and I invited him on the show because the program that he had dealt with the school systems in part and also training young people who wanted to be involved with horses. And since, you know, we did that for some time, we wanted to have him on. So he will be calling in, or his nephew, Larry Griffiths, will be calling in so we can ask him a few things, where they exist, if they're still involved. As a matter of fact, let me give some information about Ronnie right now. His home is called the Cowboys Ranch House. It's a Bread of Life, and their life, rather. And he calls his riders and his teachers the Right Way Riders. And he's a horse handler and trainer. And he did a whole lot, and he's still doing a whole lot of, you know, parades. And especially, you know, with the Black Cowboys. And this was very popular some years ago when we were talking to a Black Cowboy group in Brooklyn under Carlos Foster there. And they were very excited because of the fact that they were doing good things for the community and, you know, also involving the care of horses. So it's just going to be interesting.
Did they do what again?
Yeah, the horseback riding lessons. And as a matter of fact, they do a lot with, you know, the history of horseback riding. And it's also the history of the Buffalo Soldiers, you know, which was a group of, you know, black soldiers who rode horses, you know.
Right, Black Union Army officers.
That's right. That's
Let's see if this is one of them right now.
It could be Larry Griffiths.
Go ahead, caller.
Hello, are you on? Hello? Trying to get to the, I think it's Larry Griffith on or either Ronnie Wright. Hello, Ronnie? Hello, are you there?
914-740.
That's me. Good evening, Kay. Eric?
You called from a different number tonight.
Wayne Gomez.
Didn't know it was you. You're calling from a different number that I had written down.
Oh,
you.
Okay. Yeah. I'm calling from my landline. I normally call in cell, but for some reason the cell gets a bad signal here from time to time. Yeah.
Right. Do you remember the time when you and my mom were doing, she was interviewing the Black Cowboys and talking about the Black Rodeo during those days at WLIB?
Yes, I do. I remember, you know, again, I have to jog my memory, but it is going further, you know, far back. But I remember there was a gentleman who indirectly, I think, is responsible for bringing Kay to WLIB, Saeed Shabazz, who was deeply involved with the cowboy, the rodeo activity. He was from Staten Island. And he was tied in with people who had put on a yearly event in the tri-state area, Black yearly rodeo event. And I had not really been familiar with that, phenomenon until that particular time. But much has been written about them, I grew up in an era that all cowboys were white, not to sound racist or anything like that. But, you know, you watch the Western flicks and, you know, you read storybooks of how wild the West was. And I never saw images of, the only thing I saw dark were Native Americans, and that was it. And slaves, uh-huh. You know. So it was an interesting period.
Well, Ronnie Wright is a one of those cowboys here in New Jersey, and he has a, you know, a program where he works with children, and he's been doing this for a number of years. And he will bring them out to the stables and let them go through a period of training. Then, of course, when you have children with big animals, you know, initially they may be afraid, but they're not after they finish with Ronnie. He's a little older now, and so we're waiting for his nephew to call in. And so we can talk about where, when, and how, what kind of programs that they do. And he still has a group of, you know, cowboys that are involved with the different parades, especially, you know, in Elizabeth. So we were going to talk to him. And if they're not going to be calling in anytime soon, we can. They're calling in right now?
They're going to be calling in a minute, yeah.
Okay. So, you know, we're going to be waiting for, you know, Larry Griffin, who is his nephew, to call in. So, Larry, if you're there, if you're on the phone, I'm waiting for you.
Okay, let's get by.
But anyway, let's get back then to Wayne and when they call in, because they may be having trouble getting through. But that's a fascinating thing that they're doing, really. As a matter of fact, you know, you're often caught
talking
about
cowboy characters.
Yes, hello, how are you?
Fine.
Is this Ronnie?
Yes.
Ronnie Wright?
And, Ronnie Wright, this is All Right Cowboy.
How are you doing, Ronnie?
They don't know me as Ronnie. Fine, I'm doing fine, just fine, thank you.
Okay.
The reason why I said All Right Cowboy, because a lot of people don't know me as Ronnie. Only way back in the day.
Yeah.
That's why I was using All Right Cowboy. Just Kate.
So listen, Ronnie, wanted to ask you something. You know, how is your program still involved? Are you still, you know, working with it, you know, the kids at Eden Ranch? Where are you? Where are you working
Cowboy
with the kids?
Cowboy
Ranch House? Where is that?
Right now, we have, I'm located in Newark at their Weekway Park working on things. But we have riding stables down in Hillsboro, New Jersey, and we're working out of there for horseback riding and things while we're getting set up properly, doing what we want to do and setting the business up.
Is there still a huge interest in that, you know, with the school kids?
The children?
Yeah, and adults.
School kids, they're the main ones that I want to work with, because they're the ones that it's something about the spiritual guidance of a horse and a cowboy that will bring out who they are. And the reason why I want to work with them, because their minds are open and they're looking for to bring out who they are. And that's one way that I can get to showing them the way to do that. You know, and that's why I want to work with the kids. Ranchettes and rancheros is what I call them, and that's right, like from 12 to 17. But
12 to 17.
12 to 17 is the ranchettes and rancheros, and I'm building up a business to where, like, the cookies and things that they would be selling once I get the business going, and they would be making a profit. Do whatever they're about, you know.
Hey, Mr. Wright, how you doing? This is Eric. How you doing? This is Eric Payne. How you doing, Mr. Wright? So, can you let's act as if we're just listening. We don't know exactly what you do, and you're a black cowboy, right? And explain what it is that you're doing, because I think that people that might be listening to the show for the first time that might not be familiar with you. So we need to intro to them. What you do, and as a black cowboy, a little bit of history, and what you're doing now, if you can.
Sure. One of the things that I was doing, I started about 1959, bringing my horse around where I lived in Newark, on Bergen Street and Rose Street, right next to the cemetery. And I used to bring my horse. I love to be around people, showing off what I am as a horseman. But I didn't know what I was doing by bringing that horse up there in that area, because a lot of the kids, they didn't know anything about horses. And and they running alongside of me when I'm riding and ask me, "Are you really a cowboy yet? And is that a real horse?" You know what I mean? I said, "Oh man, I mean, I said, this is really something. The only horses they see is on the TV." So I said, "Sure, it's a real horse." So I had to stop and get off my horse and let them feel the horse. And that was a mistake. I don't know if that was a mistake or a blessing for the kids. But when I got off that horse, to let one person go, before I knew it, there was 5 or 6, then it was 10, then it was 20. I said, "Wow, I couldn't do any riding because I was trying to explain to all of them about the horses and then letting them feel it and then putting them up on the horse and taking them down." I said, "Man, I don't know if I can do this."
So they had a real learning experience, in other words.
Right. And I mean, when they found out that this is a real horse and a real cowboy, I just knew there's some kind of spiritual guidance with these horses and a cowboy. But when I really found out about that spiritual guidance, and when this little girl came in a drugstore that I was getting prescription filled, And when she came in with her mother, she's about, I guess, no more than 3 years old. She said, "Mommy, there's a cowboy." And the mommy said, "No, that's not a cowboy. He just got a cowboy hat, and he looks like a cowboy." You know what I mean? And I was kind of hurt behind it. I said, "Ma'am, your daughter is actually right in calling me a cowboy. That's what I am." And that's when I gave her a card showing her when I was just 7 years old on a horse in front of my house in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And, "Oh, I'm sorry." I said, "Well, these are the things you have to find out what your children know and try to help them to bring out who they are and what they're about. You tell them no, that's a press."
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, the name of your business is... let me see, the Chuck Wagon, or it's the home of the Cowboys Ranch House. And people can get in touch with you by calling 973-640-2033. And I've had a lot of people, you know, talk to you, wanting to know where you were, Larry. So, but anyway.
Yes.
Ronnie, rather. So, but anyway, listen, we'll be talking to you again. I just wanted to let people know that you still exist, young man. Okay.
In fact, I'm just getting started. I mean, it's really something. You see, I still exist. There's so many cowboys out here that have died off, and they think that I was one of them. But when they see me, they say, "You know, I'm still around. I'm not going anywhere." You know, and so
when people see downtown Newark, that there's a group of people on horseback riding, and you can be sure that is Larry. That's Ronnie Wright,
rather.
Okay?
Let me, if I can, Mr. Wright, before we let you go, maybe you explained that I stepped out of the room for a second. The original cowboys, the phrase cowboy, can you just let people know where that came from and who were the real cowboys, the original cowboys?
Well, you know, that's a good question, and I tell people, I ask them, "Do you really know where the name cowboy came from?" And they said, "No, all I know is they ride horses and watch it over the cows." I said, "That's true." But I said, "Do you know how they get their name?" And they said, "No." Well, I said, "Okay, I'm going to show you." I said, "Hey, boy, go out there and watch my cows." And then the boy was a man, but they called him boy on the plantations and stuff, you know. So, all right, now take my boy out there and teach him how to watch the cows. He was a boy, and he was one of the white plantation boys. So that's how that thing got stuck. So another plantation man come around. Who's that boy there? You know what I mean? That's my cowboy. See?
So
that's how that name came about, watching the cows, and that's the boy to watch the cows. That's my cowboy. And so
So it was kind of originally derogatory the way that black men were referred to back in the, and obviously we're referring to slavery times. And they would say, "Hey, boy, go watch my cow," and it just became a catchphrase. And I've often told people that because I've heard you say that before, that description before, and people think I'm joking. But that's how the phrase cowboy, that's how the phrase cowboy came about. And of course, as the brothers do, they had added that swagger and made it look good. And then, of course, the white boys wanted to be called cowboys too. And that's how America
became boys.
Yeah, right.
Being taught by the boys that they called the black man. So, but the thing that me, now, boy, get on that horse and watch all the cows. You'll be able to watch all the cows. Well, he didn't know nothing about too much about a horse. He get up on that horse and he had to figure out how to keep that horse under control. They had a harsh bitch that they put in their mouths and the reins to hold on to. And the bones was, the backs were kind of bony, and they sit up on that horse all day. They took and put pads and springs on a horse to kind of get the weight off their butt. But then the white man came along and seen what they were doing and improved upon it. That's where they put the sheep skin over top of the leather over top of wood that goes over the saddles. And they improved upon it, but the actual saddle was invented by a black man, and the bits in the mouths were black men. And then the blacksmith was putting the shoes on the horse. He was black, and he was an iron man, smith, called a blacksmith. That's where they get that name, blacksmith. You know what I mean?
So there was. You mean to tell me there was really a brother named Smith that used to work with the iron? So they called him Blacksmith. Man, America owes it. We're going to start taking – I think that America, what we need to do is get the black people meeting, and we decide what we're going to do this time, or we're going to stop making certain handshakes. We're going to stop creating styles for America to rip off and act like they done created themselves. Mr. Wright, this is something that's – and I'm going to call you Mr. Wright because I get my respect – my elders who are trailblazers, this is totally unrelated, but I was in an environment where people were dancing, where I heard a group singing, and it was a lot of R&B, top 40 R&B stuff that they were singing. And they were sounding pretty good, you know, they sounded okay. And it sounded like people were having a good time in this area. I walked over to the area, it was all white group singing top 40 black and R&B stuff. All the people in the place that were dancing were white, and I just said, "Isn't this?"
Wow.
And I said to another black person, I was like, "Wow, they really just want to be us, want all the benefits of being us, but none of the drawbacks and responsibility." And it just
reminds me. And they'll be the first to admit it.
They won't be the first to admit it. No, that's not true, Wayne. They will not admit it. They'll act like they created it and like we never existed. Like they want to do.
Oh no, I know, but what up? Like, I understand what you're saying exactly, Eric, but they certainly don't want the benefits of truly being black, you know,
right, but that's
especially
that's
in American culture.
Right. They'll never admit that they got this stuff from me. And if you go back to the hollowed position, the hollowed image of the cowboy created by the black man, and how even Vass Reeves, who is the man that the Lone Ranger is based on, a black man,
who's the
Lone Ranger was based on, even that, we give them everything, if not life.
We
know that black, that life started in sub-Saharan Africa, so everybody is African, even Mr. Trump. That's all I want to say. Let me get fired.
Boy, I'm telling you that. You are absolutely right, and it goes a lot. Everything has to add up, and I mean this is one reason why that I've been shown that my name is no longer Ronald. I don't have to be called Ronald. So I just took the R off of Ronald, and my name, I said R, period. And then I say W-R-I-G-H-T. Now I said, you can take the W off of right, and it's still right. But I said, they
That's
don't know
right.
what the W stands. This W stands for right on my name. It's for wisdom that I've been given to what I'm,
right.
to who I am and what I'm talking about. And they don't say, you all right, cowboy. I said, how do you know my name? He said,
yeah.
I know they call you cowboy, but what's your name? I said, I'm all right, you know.
Yeah.
And I have to spell it for them. Then they laugh about it because as I'm saying just what my name is. And they say, okay. I said, no, I'm not okay. I'm all right. I said, what does O mean? And what does K mean? That's just a saying. Well, I said, that's the problem. They just give you a saying to make it believe that that's what the way things are, but it's not. And I said, this is why I'm coming around doing things, and it's going to be done the right way. And that there's my way, because I've been given that privilege as a little boy of being a horseman. I'm a horse whisperer. I know what a horse is going to do before he does it. So that's going to give me the chance to straighten out things before they even get started bad, you know.
Well, Mr. Wright, if someone wanted to get contact with you and come around and learn what you know about horses, what would be the I'm looking at the number that they can contact you would be on your card would be 973-640-2033. Is that the correct number to contact you at the
Bird
of Life?
Yeah, that's the number. That's the number. And like I said, I'm showing everybody what I'm doing at the home of Cowboy Ranch House. And I'm building a home for everybody to bring in their ability to who they are and what they're about. And I want to make everybody the home of Cowboy Ranch House to whatever they are. And that way we can come together as a network and work the way we're supposed to work, being that we're the puzzle that God put here on this earth. And we're all working individually, which you can't take one piece of the puzzle and make a picture out of it. You can
That's
take
right.
the people in the same way. We're spread all out. If we bring the people together, I can make a beautiful picture. And this is what I've been shown spiritually and to who I am and what I'm about. And I'm just beginning. I've been shown that I'm going to be riding another 25 years. Now, I said that I was shown that when I was 75. Now I'm 77,
okay.
and I'm just getting started. I said, what am I going to do, put a ladder on the side of my horse and climb? If I have to do that, that's what I'm going to do. But I'm
yes,
going to bring out all the abilities to whoever want to ride or who think they can ride, or I'll give them a chance to do that. And I'm going to make this here all over the country possible.
That's right there in the South Ward of Newark, New Jersey. He's a district leader too, Mr. R. Wright. He's a cowboy, and I'm gonna come check you out because I want to get some of that knowledge too, and some of that history
yeah.
and the lineage, right here in Jersey. And everybody needs to know. Everybody needs to know about that. We want to thank you, Mr. Wright, for coming on, sharing that information with us. We'll be talking to you again soon.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. I really appreciate this. I really do.
Okay, right.
Because I wanted to be getting out there.
Right.
Fascinating
okay.
story.
Thank you very much. Okay.
Thank
bye
you.
Now.
I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. We did all
right.
You know, the one thing that, you know, I forgot to ask him was about Cowtown, New Jersey. You know, because some years ago we used to go down to Cowtown down South Jersey, and you know, they actually had the rodeo down there, which I think I became fascinated with horses during that time, and that's when, you know, my sister and I started, you know, taking the lessons and so
right.
forth. That's another story. However, welcome everyone to K-Thomas Live. Let's get into some politics here.
Right. Okay.
What's going
on? I'm sorry. No, I just wanted to welcome Byron Saunders with us. Hey,
yeah. Man. Yeah. Byron, hi. How are you?
Well, it's great to be on. I love to find the history and hear the history of the
yeah.
blacksmith and the cowboys.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we call it nowadays, it's called cultural misappropriation, as engaging the stealing of our culture and then applying it to theirs, making it's like we just didn't exist, but we've been here for quite some time. So I appreciate Mr. All Right, Cowboy All Right at that. So
you got a problem with alternative facts, Brother Saunders? You got a problem with alternative facts?
Yes, sir. I certainly do. I want the truth. Nothing but the truth will help the guy.
Right. The people would laugh at me when I told them that story, you know, how the phrase cowboy came about. But that's actual and that's true. You know, they say, go get that cowboy, you know, and that's how it is. And it just, it constantly, I'm reminded every day, and every day as I walk my life as a black man in this country, I'm constantly reminded of the hypocrisy of this nation and how many things have really been stolen from us and appropriated to build up this larger facade of this American culture that is nothing but a facade. If you look at how they treated the first African-American president and this fraud that comes along now and that is can't even get through the first 100 days without being all these accusations and lawsuits and things like that, and they have the nerve to try and say that Barack Obama wasn't one of the best presidents in history, regardless of him being the first black, first whatever, he was one of the best. And this clown that we got now is not good at all. What do you guys think?
I happen to agree, Eric. I just think it's unfortunate what is going on. I mean, every time I look at this man, try to act like as if he's some sort of regal statesman traveling around the world and, you know, bestowing what he thinks is going to bring peace, world peace. It's just amazing. I can't help but feel there's a correlation between his comments to the group that he met in Israel and that Manchester bombing by ISIS, you know? I just think it's unfortunate what has happened. I'm not one who, espouses that kind of activity and degradation in terms of, you know, lives being lost and such young lives being lost, you know. And the thing is that it could happen here, but I just can't help but feel that, you know, some of the visceral comments that comes out of this man's mouth without even thinking. I watch him. And I
what?
It looks like as if he's not even reading a script. Everything is coming, beg your pardon.
When did you say? What did you say? You said thinking in reference
well,
to Donald
yeah, well,
Trump.
Well, he thinks he's communicating, but you know, honest to God, I just think it's amazing what has gone on. And then last week, unfortunately, we weren't able to get on the air, but. So much happened in that one day. There's been so much controversy.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just going to be interesting to see what happens in the long run, how things are going to play out, because I think for some reason this whole Russian involvement in the 2016 elections is the smoking gun. And that plus the budget he released the other day, which has nothing to do with regard to helping even if core people that he had promised to help would be adversely affected by some of the cuts he's promoting for health care, you know? I mean, just incomprehensible behavior. And Republicans are going to pay a big price for it.
Well, it's 23 million people that are going to end up losing their health care. Today's House passed a measure of the Affordable Care Act, and uninsured Americans will increase by 23 million.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the thing that is very interesting to me about this president. And I've said this before, you guys all know I've said this, that he is doing, and if we look at, you're right, Wayne, we didn't get a chance to talk about the events last week because there was so much happening last week. This man, if you remember The Godfather, where Michael Corleone says, today I handle all family business, where he puts out the hit, the murder of all these other gangsters, leaders, heads of these families. Donald Trump seemed to me, once he got in office, that he was going to handle and try to cover up crime or his collusion with Russia. And systematically, I don't know whether he realized it or not, when he approached James Comey, when he approached what we now know that these other heads of the intelligence agencies to try and pressure Comey to stop the investigation, he's trying to handle take care of all of those loose ends, that where anyone could follow any kind of train or any type of trail to prove that he committed treason. And if you look at each step of the way, as he's tried to obstruct, tried to influence the outcome of this this investigation, he's been met with opposition, people who aren't going to be willing to do that. And now
exactly.
he throws his own staff under the bus, but he continues. But then when he doesn't, like Comey, he first wanted to have dinner with the guy, and Comey was trying to avoid having dinner with him. Then he asked the vice president and the head of the Justice Department to leave the room to talk to the vice president, to talk to the head of the FBI in person. So clearly you're going to ask him to do something like not investigate Michael Flynn, which he did. You're going to ask if you're under investigation. And then when Comey does not comply or does not give him his loyalty that he said that they gave, that he asked for at another time, then he trashes him, fires the man, then trashes him. This is a clear path to me. It might seem circumstantial to others, which is the loophole that our law, which people that are slimy like Trump can slip through. But this is the path. And now Flynn wants to take the fifth. He doesn't want to answer these questions because what he did, he told the Trump campaign. We already know that they knew that he was under investigation. Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, the guy leading the locker up chant was under investigation when he was leading the locker up chant. You can't make this malarkey up. I would say something else, but we're on the Kate Thompson Live Show. If we was on the Kitchen Report on the Eric Payne Show, you know what I would be calling. You can't make this up. This man is doing clearly organized criminal activity.
Yeah.
And we're going to act like it's okay and act like the problem that I have is that we're still allowing him to make decisions that affect the country. All of his decisions should be null and void. There should be, just like baseball during the steroid era, there should be an asterisk next to what Donald Trump, everything that he does, and it should be subject for approval by some more responsible people that are not criminals. Because everything, every move that he is making is to have some ulterior motive that benefits him, and in the longer sense, this is where the Republicans are messing up, that benefits them. Because they will ride out this thing until they actually have to jump off and the ship is burning, if you know what I mean. Because they'll sit there and ride or die with him, like Trey Gowdy the other day, talking to John Brennan, who was beyond reproach. Is beyond reproach. This man has worked in intelligence in the FBI so long. And Trey Gowdy, the Republican, was talking about, do you have any actual evidence? Well, his job is not to get the evidence. His job is to make the case. And they said that the job of the evidence is the justice, is the FBI. But you see, they're so worried about leaks and having the actual evidence that they're willing to ride this ship until it almost sinks.
Yeah.
And that's where we have to look at. Because what it appears, if you look at the last two presidential elections and the last two Republicans that have become president, they've become president under some kind of cloudy, shaky, janky circumstance. And it appears that some Republicans aren't above cheating. And that's me. Some of them aren't above cheating, stealing elections, committing treason with our enemies just so they can get what they want. And these other Republicans like Ryan, McConnell, and McCarthy, these other idiots, they know what went down, but they don't want to speak on it because they're going to wait till absolutely the right time, until they absolutely have to make a decision, then they're going to decide. But we can only hope that what the Democrats do and the rest of the people are wake up to see this. And we know that there's a certain number of Republicans who aren't. There's a certain number of Republicans who are racist, who are prejudiced, and this is exactly what they want. They would rather the country do business with our arch rival, our enemy, so-called, and just as long as it means that they can win the election, take back, and have a very kind of old-school America, if you know what I mean, an America where certain people had first-class citizenship and everybody else was second-class citizenship.
Yeah.
You want to say
that? Yeah,
I understand. Go ahead, Kate.
I want to get Byron in here because, you know, we didn't get to before. So, Byron, what do you say about all this?
Well, I think that constitutionally is the clarity of all of this will be decided based on the law. We have, and I think I understand why Trump is not being addressed straightforward at this point. Yes, he has so much that's evidence that's accumulating that will definitely cook his goose, so to speak. However, he's not the only one. He is not the only prize in this investigation. This goes all the way up to the Speaker of the House. This goes all the way up to the leader of the Senate. Their involvement in this treasonous act and obstruction of justice is why it's got to, I believe, take its time to really engage the full course of justice. Otherwise, and I'll say this, and you can mark it for this day, that unless it is taken to its full court of justice, this democratic republic will not survive or sustain beyond this moment. This has to right the ship now. We cannot afford to have a Republican-held Senate or Congress with men and women who have created heinous acts of treason. Otherwise,
right.
The republic will dissolve instantly. It's a house of cards, and the cards are falling now.
I don't know if you wanted to jump in there, Wayne.
No, I happen to agree with Byron, because in all honesty, I mean, thank God we have a system of checks and balances. And I also have to agree with what you said earlier, Eric. I mean, there are some Republicans who are just hell-bent on trying to see things from the Republican conservative perspective, particularly that conservative element of the party, that would put this country at risk by another world power, undermine what it is that we have to protect ourselves by just trying to score a point to say that they're back, large, and in charge, and rewrite history or at least turn the clock back to how it was when they were basically having a lot of their needs politically met. In the last month or so, there have been studies, I want to say Quinnipiac College just recently did a survey, that there have been a number of defections in the Republican Party amongst young Republicans who are now joining the ranks of Democrats, and I am hoping that this is a movement towards bringing about some sort of stability and sanity. But getting back to Byron's point, I really feel that the only way that we could quell this disturbance that we're having at the White House is impeachment. And we have a system of checks and balances. We have to just get enough evidence to fry this boy. And I'm saying politically fry. Not I don't want anybody coming here looking to shoot me or anything like that, espousing the man's death. But, you know, the bottom line is that, you know, something's got to turn around, because it's just we're an embarrassment. It's just embarrassing just to see him daily and some of the things that he'll come out and say, you know?
Wayne, one other thing that I wanted to point out with respect to not just what's going on in Washington, but I'm also very concerned about the other 50 contiguous states, because let's think about the red states and the governors who are in control. Every last one of them are dependent upon the defense budget to engage job creation. That whole deal in Saudi Arabia. Think about every one of those signatories on that document and before they had the sword dance, every last one of them from Exxon on down were all signatories who are beneficiaries of the defense budget contract. We must follow the money trail. Those jobs are going to be munitions jobs, building weapons of mass destruction, creating and continuing to supply a war effort. And then back home in the rest of the 50 states, and this is where it becomes even more damning, that the Russian hacking was not just on the national level. It was a statewide level where you look at 1%, every swing state that was in question for the election, every last one of them gave Trump a victory by 1%. Do you know the odds of that happening? That's incredible. That's not supposed to happen in an election like this. And
well, he said it was rigged.
Really,
he was saying it was rigged.
But here's where it gets even more disturbing, is that we have governors who don't know how to govern. They have they give away tax incentives to corporations, and then they on the backs of the state citizens, they will raise they will engage in double dipping in taxes, which ultimately you give a corporation a benefit of tax break, and then the corporation engages in a private public partnership for which they can then turn around and raise the rates and raise the expenses for the JQ public. It's not only supporting and paying for the taxes that the corporation is supposed to pay, but then they're also giving money back to the corporations. That's like our public-private partnerships with penal institutions. That's criminal. What's going on?
Yeah,
and that's what happens when you have a top-down CEO mentality. When
exactly.
you have people coming in there with a CEO mentality of governing, and usually
exactly.
you had. Not usually. Sometimes you might have had some of these moral or you know, public thinking CEOs that kind of take the approach of let's not really just like run rampant and exploit the entire system. So it's like Bernie Madoff obvious. You have some that are willing to, you know, they do it in a slow manner where they allow some of the residents to have a certain lifestyle and achieve a certain, you know, affordability in certain states. So therefore, it's
They'll call it sin tax. Right. They'll call it sin tax, Eric. I mean, you know, let's raise the taxes on tobacco, alcohol, gasoline. Let's
right.
have lotto.
Right.
Let's have gambling, establish gambling so that they can raise money to pay for schools and social services. But look at the budget that this Trump has submitted to Congress, and then you understand all of the cuts are going to go to two direct essence of the budget is to go to two direct programs, defense budget
right.
and his wall to build in Mexico
right.
to, on the border.
And
that's right.
They're cutting all the social programs. That's the Republican playbook.
Exactly.
They want to cut social programs
yes.
and they want to build stuff to blow and kill people.
I find
it ironic that this guy signed a $1 billion deal with Saudi Arabia. And, you know, if we look back to 9/11, that they say some of the alleged terrorists came from Saudi Arabia, first off. Secondly, that we know that we sell arms to these people and they end up all over the Middle East, right? I mean, that's already been a fact. So he strikes an arms deal, a $1 billion arms deal with Saudi Arabia, supposed to be, I guess, when they feel like it, our alliance. But then somehow our weapons end up all over the world fighting against us. So I wouldn't necessarily trust that deal. We're giving them $1 billion. We're getting $1 billion, I guess, worth of business, so we can build arms and military equipment to be used against us. Now, people got mad at Obama for making sure that this deal went through, where I guess Iran got this money that they were supposed to get that the United States had frozen. And these people made such a big deal out of it. Here we are striking a business deal with people to sell them arms that potentially could be used to against us, and which is really the crazy thing. And to have a guy who is so Hitler-esque and appeals on a nationalist, a white nationalist agenda, to have them believe, you know, some of these alt-right people, you know, you've been heard about the when they were removing the statues in Louisiana, that one group that was protesting, the pro-white group led by the nutty guy who got punched in the face at the inauguration, you know, they were chanting, "We are Russian. We are Russian." So that means that some of these people literally, they want more white folks to come into because they think America, for some reason, they thought America was a white nation. I guess if you murder off the people where you live here, I guess you could call it whatever you want. But I guess it's becoming too diverse of a country now for these people. And true diversity is what they're against. I saw a sign in one of these protests that diversity equals white genocide, which is ironic because white genocide, white population building has equaled the genocide of diversity, I guess you could say, if you wanted to put it like that. Mm-hmm. But it's just interesting how the entire facade, I mean, from the origins of this country and its history to what the myth of America has been to where we are now with
this man being the ultimate example of white privilege that's in the White House. I think Donald Trump is so much an example of white privilege that George W. Bush is saying, damn, he's an example of white privilege.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, because what worries me, and Byron, you brought it up, is that one of these governors is doing in these states, right, how they're working to dismantle the voting rights, and that was just rejected by the high court,
yes.
that particular law to try and cut back on voting rights. But also what Jeff Sessions is doing, you know, when we're not hearing about him. Also what Ivanka and Jared are doing when we're not hearing about them, but seeing them on the trip. We know that Ivanka somehow got the trademark for her to sell her clothes in China after hanging out with the president of China with her dad when they did some type of a bombing run or whatever in Syria. When the Ross guy talked about it was after dinner entertainment for the United States to bomb some section of Syria. So it kind of tells you the mentality of this whole criminal organization that is the Trump administration, that I like to call it, because that's the way they're running things. They're doing a high-tech, a billionaire's version of looting. They're looting everything that they can within in the government. They're looting every business opportunity that comes across. They're looting. They're doing rich people looting. Mm-hmm. Billionaire, criminal, robber, baron, looting.
Well, America's going to pay a price for that. I'm sorry. I mean, it's unfortunate that we have to pay a price for that. But because of that ignorance, because of that level of, arrogance and mentality, you know, conversely, we will be affected. And I just hope that we, you know, in righteous indignation, that all those Democrats and Republicans who want to see this man out of office just act, you know, when the goods are presented, and it's time to call for his impeachment, you know, that the work is done, you know, because as time goes on and he gets comfortable in the position, I still think that we're dealing with someone who is not mentally all there. I'm sorry. You know, I mean, people back in the day when George W. was elected, they talked about his past problems with alcoholism, which is well documented, you know, but we're dealing with an element and a mentality out here today that, you know, I don't know what it smacks of. I mean, I'm not a psychiatrist or psychologist, but I do know just some of his behavior. I mean, just the things that he's extremely sensitive and he just has a knee-jerk response to everything. You know, I just don't know what to say. I mean, there's something wrong there. And I'm not alone. A lot of people have said
He is not all there. I said initially when I first saw him, and he said that he was running for office, and I said to Eric Emery, so right, if you remember, I said, he is Hitleristic. The things that he was saying, and it just didn't make sense. It was dangerous, and we were going into a dangerous area. Listen, anytime his wife gets off a plane and, you know, jerks her hand from him, you know, even she knows it.
Right. And there's trouble in that relationship there, you know. I mean, it's become. I tell you, that's why I could never run for public office, because you know your life is in a fishbowl, you know. I mean, it's unfortunate with what goes on there, but I mean it. She knows that everybody has an agenda, you know. Ivanka has an agenda, you know. The son-in-law has an agenda. He gets a chance to play at something that he thought he'd never aspire to be. You know, it's so incomprehensible, the fact that we are just playing this out. It's like a movie that you want to see come to an end. You know, you're waiting for the epilogue, you know, but it hasn't happened yet. And, you know, I just hope it happens soon, because we're going down the tubes, you know, worldwide. We're just seeing things, you know, just meeting with the Pope today, you know, just thank God that he only gave him 30 minutes, you know, and the discussion didn't go beyond the wall or the discussion about immigration or even the environment, which are issues a year ago he was criticizing, you know, the pontiff about. How dare he enter this arena, you know? I mean, it's just unfortunate, but I don't know.
This individual is suffering from extreme narcissism.
Mm-hmm.
And,
oh,
and
yeah.
There's something not right. I mean, he obviously is someone who needs that adulation. He's someone that needs to have people admire and really not challenge him at all. And to see how this guy operates and relates to people, everything is as it relates to him. I mean, you know, the speech at the Coast Guard the other day, the commencement speech, is at how the press was treating him. They were coming down on him.
Exactly.
If you look at the footage of Comey when he's in the White House at the time, he walks across the room. If you listen to it, you can hear the president say, "This guy's become more famous than me. Everything is me. How he
right.
can relate it and draw it back to himself. And that's like a serious kind of mental problem, somebody who can't see the world as it does not relate to them. We've got a guy who takes responsibility for nothing but wants to take credit for everything, for every single thing.
Yeah.
And I said it, the Republicans are not going to do anything until they absolutely have to.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys are going to ride this out until they're going to try to benefit, like Trump, they're going to try to benefit from all the good things that might happen by mistake from him. And then when that stuff runs out and the bad things start happening, they're going to jump ship out and say, "See, I told you he was no good." In the meantime, they're benefiting if we don't see them. I mean, you know, you can imagine what they're doing in the back rooms. I mean, talk about, just think about this one particular story about this DNC worker who was murdered in D.C., a botched
right.
robbery, and it became a news story how the Republicans were trying to make it like the guy committed suicide or his emails were hacked, he was in connected with WikiLeaks. They made up all this despicable stuff on Fox News. They have to retract that. They're losing advertisers. Hannity, who is one of the most despicable, I know what type he is.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, your mother and I had did time with him blow by blow. I mean, he had an agenda.
I would like to do time with him in a locked room.
Exactly.
Time with him in a locked room and all these fake tough guys that want to get on there and talk all of that craziness that they like to talk. I'd like to sit in a room with him and O'Reilly and just see just how much trash they talk if there's no cameras around. Because I guarantee you those are the exact types that have nothing to say. Nothing.
Exactly.
Eric, you bring and Wayne, you bring up a very interesting point. I'm in Atlanta for my youngest son's graduation, and there's something that's extremely disturbing that's happening nationally, and it's starting with the top in this administration, and it's trickling down to the common man and woman. And it's all about confrontation and bullying. This concept, which is being driven from the top down, there was an incident in a DeKalb County school down here where two teachers started duking it out in a classroom. I don't know if you've seen this yet, but it's extremely disturbing. And we are talking about an incident in which in our public school where two teachers who are supposed to be the pillars of the class and share and mentoring students. And at a point where they have disagreements, they are duking it out. I mean, two women teachers who are going at it like it's WWF. I mean, the thing that's very disturbing to me, guys, is that basically we're talking about situations in which there's no compassion coming from the top down. We had an incident in New York where that guy did a U-turn on Broadway and killed people. And I walked down to that site the other day on my way out of town coming here to Atlanta, and I looked at that site. People
could've
were standing
you.
Around it. That's right. They were. It makes you, when you walk down through that where that little spot is, that 42nd and Times Square,
I know what you're
you
talking
immediately
about.
Become sensitized to anything that could potentially happen, and as people are standing there taking pictures where the pillar that he lodged his car up on, they've autographed it, there are flowers there, people are standing around there taking pictures, and I mean at a point at which there was no compassion from the White House whatsoever.
Not a peep.
You're not
exactly.
a peep. And this is the problem of a world leader who is supposed to be from the most powerful country in the world, showing no compassion for its own citizens, and yet while signing a deal in Saudi Arabia, the kickback was $100 million to Ivanka's budget.
Let's talk about presidential behavior, and that's not president. Yes. We got someone that's just walking around in the White House. There's no president in the White House. There's 45.
None.
Right?
It's blatant conflict of interest.
Number 45. But let me also tell you something about that, and it's unfortunate that happened. But, you know, and I said this after 9/11 also, that the rest of America, in particular, I think a lot of white Americans, what 9/11 did was put the people always on guard that at any moment something could pop off. Mm-hmm. That is how people who live in the hood live, right?
That's right.
If you live in the hood, any moment something could pop off.
Yeah.
You got to walk with. I remember when I first started hanging in New York, I started coming to New York on a regular at a college, and a buddy of mine that lived in Queens, it was the first one I started frequently going to New York with. And he would tell me sometimes you got to get your New York walk on. You know, you got to walk like you mean business in certain areas of the city. You know, you guys know what I'm talking about, right? You can't just be walking down the street lollygagging like some people like have no cares, free, and everything's going to protect them. You got to walk like you mean business in certain neighborhoods. Because in certain neighborhoods, anything can pop off. And this mentality of that's a certain amount of mental terrorism, right? Because you're walking around, anything can pop off. It's like stop and frisk at any time. The rest of America, the rest of the world knows what it's like to walk, be in an environment where at any time anything can pop off. African Americans, a lot of African Americans live in those environments 24/7. So that stress level, that's why a lot of folks have that gallows humor. A lot of things don't really get to them as much because they're walking around in that environment where they're walking around in an oppressed state, of potentially terrorist environment. So that's why a lot of the brothers and sisters walk around. There ain't nothing new. Ain't nothing new to them. They're walking around and get pulled over, stopped and frisked at any time. So it's nothing new. We got three.
I understand what you're saying, Eric, and I happen to agree, and I understand clearly what you're saying. I mean, sometimes I have to go down to the Boogie Down Bronx to remind myself this is the culture I came out of, or go back to Brooklyn is so gentrified now I can't even go back there. But the bottom line is that no one should have to live like this. You know, no one should have to go to a place where they're looking to be entertained or sightsee or what have you and worry about having to be impacted by somebody's ill-gotten gains in life. And it's just one of those things, and I just see more and more of it happening now. At one time, that used to be anesthetized to a certain extent. And I understand the dynamic about the black neighborhood, the culture, and having to walk around with your eyes wide open. But the flip side is, as you get older, you don't want to have to be – it just seems to be an unnecessary pressure, you know? I mean, I ride the subway sometimes, and it's like night and day. I get on commuter rail, you know, you would wonder, well, gee, you know, what's the difference? You know, just because you pay more for commuter rail – and there's a greater safety, and you know, you get on the subways, and you're holding your heart in your lap. You know, I mean, it's just unfortunate.
It's
I'm talking about people who look like us coming at you.
We got to put a pin in it right there, Wayne. That's,
okay.
Fodder for another conversation.
Right.
That's starting to think me about some things that, you know, the expense, what you're willing to pay for comfort. That's why you live further out in certain areas. But anyway, we got to go. I want to say thank you to our cowboy, our legendary cowboy, Mr. R. Wright, cowboy extraordinaire. We're going to be talking to him real soon again. I'm going to go pick his brain because I want to know that history and that lineage.
Yeah.
Want to say thank you to our resident host, Mr. Byron Saunders, the resident guest.
Peace
Mr.
and
Byron
love.
Saunders.
That's
right. Right.
Peace and love, everyone. Indeed.
Perhaps,
walk
congratulations,
tall.
Congratulations, Byron. Congratulations, Daniel, with your son. We got to jump. Thanks, Byron. Wayne, thanks again, sir.
Thank you. I'll ditto your comments about Byron's son as well.
All right.
And good night, Kay.
Good night.
Thanks,
everybody. Good night, everybody. Mike, you want to say good night?
Yep, good night.
Good night. It's been Kay Thompson Live Show. Thanks for listening. Every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. live. Or you can also listen to the show archive. Thank you, everybody. Peace.